Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince, they exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to My Turn, Waypoint's movie podcast, where we take turns talking about a series of related films to draw connection. Well, I guess we'll see how this part of the conceit goes. If we have time for it at the end of this show, or maybe in what I am sure will be a reasonable and not at all ugly and accusatory group DM after the show. But the intent is we take related films and draw connections and interesting contrasts among them. Today we're watching Prey, Dan Trachtenberg's prequel that takes a late reveal from the end of Predator 2 and absolutely runs with it, with a Predator movie about a group of Comanche being stalked by the alien hunter in the early 1700s. It's currently on Hulu as a Hulu original, and we are going to be talking about it in some detail. So if you've not seen it and want to preserve some of the surprise, you are listening to the wrong podcast at the moment. You should go watch that movie. And then come back and listen to it. So I guess to start us off, this is like set the stage a little bit because I'm curious to hear what y'all make of this. Well, the film is ultimately going to be about considering and thinking about the reversals of hunter and hunted, predator and prey dynamics through the saga of this predator's rampage through the Northern Plains. The film opens with one of its central conflicts, which is Amber Midthunder's young Comanche woman, Naru, trying to gain access to a rite of passage as a hunter. Her brother, Tabe, is recognized as one of her village's best hunters, but Naru is being groomed to be a physician in the footsteps of her mother, and evidently, as we see early in the film, has the skills and knowledge for it. And I think what's sort of set up here is, in some ways, a really standard, like, modern feminist setup, which is that she's a woman who seeks to enter and excel in a sphere that is often regarded as the domain of men in her village. And as a character, I think it's Tabe, actually asks why she's so bent on being a hunter. It is because it is people telling her she can't do it. It is the fact that she is being sort of excluded from it that makes it such a mission for her. But I'm also curious if, like, what you make of this conflict, and do you feel like it is subverting at all this, like, familiar premise of the, like, feminist coming-of-age story and the feminist quest?
I mean, I think it's a bit girl bossy. That was one of my frustrations with the film, is that I think that it begins and follows some pretty girl bossy beats at times in a way that I found a little bit disappointing. But I do think that the film manages to, in its later acts, combine its understanding of Naru as, like, a, like, masculine-coded hunter with its understanding of the other forms of labor which she has been taught to practice throughout her entire life. And there I find something actually interesting, because I think one of the, like, better parts of her character is that she finds a way to synthesize both aspects of her life and fully embrace both, and that is the only way she's able to win at the end of the movie, which is, like, I think it's a pretty on-the-nose way to do things, but I don't actively hate it.
Well, it's interesting because relative to when we had the discussion about Predator, I think I think we all agree that movie is doing some things, but I still hold on to the theory that some of that is textual reading happening after the fact and less of the movie wrestling with those themes itself. And what I think is interesting about Prey, like however you feel about how it lands those beats, is it is explicit about forwarding its themes, about its character, its relationship to the Predator. I think because, you know, Trachtenberg and the screenwriter who came with the story, I think correctly understood the problems with doing sequels with horror franchise characters is how do we you've seen it, like what do we do after that, you know? The solution right. to that in Alien to Aliens is more, there's more of it. It's an action movie. Alien isn't an action movie, it's a horror film. It's and Predator 2 is camp, it's a B movie. It takes Predator 2 and says, well, what you want to see is more of the gore, right? And sure, that has its attractions, but it's pretty shallow. And I think Prey, by establishing, I think part of maybe what you're getting at, Rob, is like it's taking a lot of like modern examinations of feminism and then applying it to this lens. And I wonder if that is maybe some of how it maybe doesn't hold as strongly in the film. But I do, it gives the movie a lot more weight. It gives it something to hang its hat on that is beyond the litany of like clever tricks it has about the Predator and its relationship to the environment that I think all slap pretty hard. But I think having that as a core was a smart way to approach. But like, what are we even doing here? Like, how do you even, you know, if the core of a Predator film that comes after the first is, well, I guess we're here for some sick kills, which is what that's all slashers do, is become a writer sitting in a room coming up with an inventive way to kill someone with whatever they can find in the setting. That happens here in ways that are extremely gratifying, but also contextually like feel good and right for the world. But we also get a through line. And I like the fact that it gives the movie a lot more going for it than I think it would otherwise.
I found, and maybe this is just me misremembering, since I did watch it like last week. I'm a little further from it maybe than some of y'all are. I don't remember it being, it's inherently gendered because of who you see doing the work, but I don't remember it ever being brought up by people as like, this is why, it's because you are a woman. It's more like, you're just not good at it. It is? Okay. This is the thing that I wasn't remembering at all.
Frequently.
Because it, like, what I remember is just like, you're not ready, versus a sort of like, you could never do it ever.
Yeah, well, there's specifically a sequence where she is, like, it's one of the more powerful scenes where she is quietly leaving to go investigate the Predator while all the women are, like, going off to collect flowers, you know, like other various labor that would normally be attached to her. But I mean, you are right that the film doesn't completely shut the door on this being a possibility for her.
Right.
It is not as though the movie says, law
where it's like women are not allowed, but it is like, that's an expectation. Weird.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, why would you do that? Like you're good at this.
Which is like an interesting way of like, this is just like the more kind of like, this society has what's the word I'm looking for? It's like compulsory heteronormativity, right? Where it's like, it just is the thing that happens more so than like people are, might like, not the thing that happens, but the thing that is like expected and isn't necessarily like set about in like that clear cut of a term, you know? It's more, not insidious, but like pervasive and underlying than like an out and out, you could never because you're a woman. It's more like, that doesn't happen, is the kind of like, I don't know, seemed like a kind of different tack to the like the sort of way that this is usually set up, where it's like, you could never because you're a woman, which didn't feel like the same tack they took this time. It felt a little more.
I would push back on this slightly, because like, this standard is not just socially enforced, but enforced through violence. Like, there is a scene in this movie where a dude tries to beat the shit out of her to prove that she cannot do this thing. And the gendering of that violence and the way that scene is structured makes it feel like the film understands it as more than social convention. This is not just social convention. This is a social convention that people feel strongly enough about that they are willing to hurt someone extensively in order to reinforce it.
Yeah, but she kicks that guy's ass. is the other thing that happens in that scene. Like, she ends up getting so, ganged up on, but when this is a one-on-one fight, yeah.
The thing is, for me, like, I think both of these readings are kind of true as far as this goes, because, like Ren, you're absolutely correct. Like, later in this film, the other hunters, not her brother, but, like, the other men or young men in the village specifically hate that she is trying to do this.
Yeah.
They hate that she is in their space. And when given a light justification for beating the shit out of her, they jump at it. And so, like, I think that is in there. However, it did interest me that, like, from the standpoint of her family, it wasn't like, no, you can't do this. We won't let you. That's not what women do in this village. It is more of a, but why do you want to do this? And what caught my interest there, though, is also partly, I think one of the things that, like, is being examined through this film is, like, why hunt? Why, like, what value does this provide? I think early in the film, like, and maybe this is also just, like, me increasingly identifying with the parent-aged characters in stories. She's way more useful as a physician. Like, undeniably. She catches her mother. She's also
incredibly talented, right? Like, the movie is, like multiple times demonstrates it is not the just...
right.
She's being forced, like, no, you're good as shit at this, and you're like, she saves lives multiple times throughout the film.
But the thing is, like, she catches her mom making a mistake, preparing a medicine. She's, like, forgotten a major, like, active ingredient. She sort of catches it and notices the error. And yeah, she's omnicompetent. But her answer to start, like, it does sound girl bossy, right? I'm doing it because none of you think I can. And I feel like part of this film is that is not a good enough reason for this. Like, I want to be a hunter because you won't let me is not a good enough reason to be like,
that's a teenager.
Right. Yeah, and exactly.
It's also not the conclusion that the film ends at. Like, the conclusion that the film ends at is 100% is because I have to. This is a thing that I am, one, excellent at, and two, it is a necessary thing going forward, because I think that the colonial context of this film is actually a really strong inclusion, because, you know, the Predator, you know, if the original Predator movie, right, begins with the idea of this group of soldiers, this group of, like, American soldiers or, you know, European soldiers or Eastern, you know what I mean, they're not all European, you coming into an environment with technological superiority and weaponizing it and then having it turned against them. This film begins with a not technological inferiority, because I think that applies too much of a value judgment on the technologies of power that the Comanche have access to in this film, which are actually way more expansive and varied than the technologies of power that, or like the modes of power that the French colonizers have access to. But it allows the movie to play in this space where the Predator as a character is able to embody the role both of a technological superpower and also of a colonizing presence. And Naru's ability to push back both on the literal French colonizers and also the Predator as a colonizer is, I think, a really strong thrust for the character, and allows her to be like, okay, I am the person who is capable of pushing back against not only, like, hunting in the traditional sense, but also technological threats that we are now coming into contact with. I have experience and know how to work around this. And I think that is, like, part of the strength of her character, is a intimate understanding of the technologies of power, or, like, the technology she has access to, which is medicine, and also an understanding of the environment as technology and as tool. As much as is a thing that you interface with and interact with as a, like, non, like, technological source.
Early in the film, so, like, something else that kind of jumped out at me is I'm just curious, just in terms of the vibe of the movie, early in this film, there's part of me that was like, I can't believe this is a fucking Predator movie. I cannot believe this is a Predator movie.
And then it was released on Predator 2. Now, released on, I mean, this movie is supposed to be released in theaters. It was a quirk of the Disney acquisition of Fox, in which Fox's movies have an existing deal with HBO. So if Disney, much like the way HBO Max is just deleting things to not give residuals to any of the people like involved in it, the reason this never hit theaters was because Disney, you know, co-owns and runs Hulu. And so you release it in one theater, then HBO gets it. And so it ends up on Hulu instead. And it feels like the sound design, like some of the sweeping shots, like it's like Rob, a Predator movie with money on the screen feels extremely odd. Like it's like this looks, Geeta Jackson wrote a story recently about why do Netflix, I'm butchering the headline, but
why do Netflix movies look like that?
Yes. And there's an extension of that, which is why do all streaming, you know, XYZ look like that? There are reasons for that. And go read Geeta's excellent piece to see a better explanation of that. But that is like a thing I found striking, like you early on, was just, my God, like it looks gorgeous in a way that kind of takes your breath away relative to what you're expecting the rest of the movie to be about.
It doesn't scan as a straight to streaming mm-hmm. movie, honestly.
No.
Like it, yeah, it's really unfortunate that we won't get a chance ever probably to see this in a theater. Cause like, even with my, like, I have a TV that has pseudo HDR and I was like, shit. Like, I wish I could see this on a projected screen.
There are scenes where, and I think the like color gradation changes throughout the film, but the high contrast scenes mm-hmm. are gorgeous.
Yeah.
Opening montage you mentioned, Rob, or not opening, but mid-film montage of her moving through the environment is one, exceptionally well shot in terms of like the traditional, this is a important character moving through a space style of cinematography that is like has a well-established tradition. Within that tradition, this is a great example of it and looks brilliantly done. But the high contrast applied to all of it makes it vivid and exciting in a way that like really blew me away, because I think that it is very easy to do that exact style of cinematography and that exact style of color gradation and have it come off as extremely corny. Or like, all right, dog, we know what this looks like, right? We know what the style of character perspective and positioning looks like. And I think the film actually manages to pull it off through a really excellent understanding of the environment in which Naru is being shot. And that's part of the strength of the movie, is the intimacy with which it like interacts with the space that is being inhabited, and like kind of elevates those sequences for me.
They feel like real places. We talked about this with Predator. Like right. One of the things that is amazing about that film, where certainly some of it must have been shot or like, you know, pickups on some sort of stage, can't tell, because so much of it feels like, hell yeah, like they went to, you know, some jungle and figured this out. And certainly this movie was probably shot differently, right? But so much of it, however they pull it off, whether it's a technical feat or being in like physical places, I think it's a testament to the filmmakers understanding that's part of what makes Predator work, that original film work, because I feel like that really, despite the fact this movie has way more CG, right? Like, and very obvious. And I don't mean that in the like it's cheap or like the VFX people were rushed sort of way, more that like, yeah, like I know this trick they're doing with the Predator is an effect, and that wasn't present on set at the time. But they still manage, like, even in, you know, that later sequence in like the ashy forest during like the big blow up between the French trappers and the Predator, like it still feels physical and real, or real enough that I buy what's going on far more than I expected to, or most films that exist on this same plane of existence ever managed to pull off.
Yeah, I think that's part of why I really like the color gradation of this movie, is that it allows the CG to blend into mm-hmm. and feel a part of the world as opposed to distinct from it. I think that like high contrast and higher saturation like film works really well with effects, because you're already looking at a version of reality that you recognize as heightened. And so when something does a heightened version reality thing in that space, it reads as more connected. In a way that I really appreciate.
I think something else for me that I just sitting there, I just had this, the thought occurred to me. I was just like, this is a movie ass movie. And what, yeah. what I mean by that is like the leisurely, in some ways it's a lot like Predator. Like Patrick, you mentioned like there's long stretches where Predator is effectively a wordless film. And watching this, like the sense of rhythms of life you get in the village, the pointed silences, the fact that like the film is okay being like nothing is happening and yet tons of characters being established. And so a lot of things are happening. This is interesting to show people. And the way they do that also like that right after we get the title card. And we follow like Naru back to her village and spend the day there. She hey, great, she walks through
just great title card, by the way. I don't want to get too far past that. Like the pan up and like the way the music kicks in. Like I stood up like when that happened. Well, it was great.
God, and that's something else that the Trachtenberg uses such good effect here is that we all know the rules of the Predator movies. We know like the assumption is you know what all this means.
And that's usually such a weakness.
But the joy is watching Naru figure it out.
Yes.
But like the juxtaposition at the start when you hear, and it's so cool because like it's the 1700s. You hear that thing screaming in over the atmosphere and you know immediately like that's fucked up. Like that's like a fighter jet rolling into your area. Like that should be alarming. But for her, it's just a total mystery. And all that it means is that it startled the deer she was hunting. And that's the problem. And when she sees it coming in through the atmosphere, like the clouds roiling, what she sees is a sign, a portent for her. And like the way all of it is initially as sort of just rendered into part of her environment and her like ontology. And how that is going to be rocked over the course of the film. She's going to adapt to this new reality.
It also makes the parallels between the Predator and the French fur trappers so much stronger. Because we understand the rules of Predator movies, right? The rules of Predator movies is that when you see a skinned body, that is the work of the Predator. And so when she comes across the herd of skinned buffalo, and she's like, this is not how this is done. The audience's first thought is, that's how the Predator works. Hey, the Predator skins things, but their skulls are still intact. And why do buffalo. They still have their skulls? And why are they a not? Yes, exactly. Why is that a non-Predator animal laying there?
Why so many of them?
Yeah, this
Predator, exactly. We get really pissed off at this whole set of buffalo.
and that's such an excellent choice. That is such like a terrific decision on part of the film. Because again, the thing that I find really interesting is the way in which the Predator in this movie acts as analog to both Naru, because the Predator moves like Naru, which is an important point. The Predator moves through spaces in the same way that she does. It jumps off of trees in the same ways that she does. But like the hunters, its approach to violence is deeply almost voyeuristic, I would say, because it is about the acquisition and collection of trophies. It is just that the hunters are doing it for commerce as well as trophy hunting. And I think it's a really excellent part of the film.
They also give the Predator an arc. The Predator doesn't really have an arc in the original film. The Predator, I mean, you're right, it has a goal, but like I get the sense, I'm not sure how all of you read this one, but this felt like a teenage punk. Like this, like whereas the Predator in the original film felt a little older, like the one, like a Predator that would look at itself, laugh ironically, and you know, using a voice modulator, and then blow itself up. Like this just feels like this felt like, and it's part of as you were saying, Ren, like why the parallels of this film seem to work, because actually, I think Naru and the Predator are on similar journeys. In here, I don't know, you know, the lack of context is important to Predator movies. Like, don't take us to Predator world. I don't need to know, but you do get a better sense of this isn't just usually the way these slasher films work is there's no characterization given to the opposing force because, well, that's not what we're here for. And what this movie understands is that, well, and also what these movies tend to get caught up in is, well, time for lore, right? Like, let's do some world building. And that just goes so, I enjoy watching the eighth installment in a horror franchise to see why they do that. It's fun to me, but not in a good way. It's like fun in a B movie sort of way. Cause all horror movies arc towards a B movie, because they run out of ideas. And part of what makes this work is they give just enough to this Predator where Whereas in the first Predator, we more or less just get the infrared vision. Here, we get sequences of the Predator on its own, having a journey, like going through the hierarchy of predator prey and learning like that he's kind of a punk. They're like, he's going to get bit. Like he's going to get
hit. He doesn't, he takes L's. That's the thing I love about this version of the Predator is that he takes L's and does not just take L's from time to time. He takes L's in every single fight he has. He takes L's against a dog. He takes L's against a bear. He doesn't know what the fuck he's doing in a way that I find really appealing.
And I think this is for me also like, he is in some ways an even more recent colonizer than the French, right? Like he appears and so much of like, you mentioned like sometimes it feels voyeuristic. Like part of it is you get a sense this is also a predator that is like actually really keenly interested in this new environment. Like it spends a lot of time watching things play out and sort of like trying to figure out like what is going on and takes like, and, but then all it can think to do is like, how can I identify a badass animal for me to kill? Like it is so fucking happy when it rocks that bear. But like also like that movie almost ends right there, by the way.
Fucked so bad.
Like that entire sequence is incredible. Again, like her immediate recognition, like she can get temporary safety from the bear in the beaver dam. And then the predator deciding I'm gonna poke that bear and see what happens. And it is an amazing sequence.
Does anyone, I'm trying to, there's a sequence of events thing. Do we remember what fight after is it that we see the Predator going through its little healing ritual?
It is after the first time it encounters the Comanche. So they land a bunch of hits on it.
Right.
And afterwards, it sits down and is like, oh, man, they really fucking got my ass.
Wow, arrows hurt.
Right, right. Yeah, and it didn't need that against the snake and the wolf. Even though the wolf got it, it was like not just a flesh wound, I guess.
Yeah,
I mean, that's the other thing is that this film's action choreography is pretty stellar. And also, I think, again, its action choreography is not only like visually really engaging, but also does a great job of connecting the ways in which these characters do violence and understanding how that connects to the way in which they interface with environments, right? Depending on who the predator is fighting, it takes such different approaches to violence in a way that I find really interesting and like ties into the ritualistic combat aspects of the Predator, in which like against the Comanche, the Predator doesn't use a lot of its tools because it is like, these people do not use tools like this. And so I'm going to fight them with tools that are similar to what they use. I'm going to use a projectile weapon, but also that's how Naru fights. When Naru fights off in the camp to save the dog, when she fights off that group of people and uses her tomahawk in like really inventive ways, it feels like she is meeting people on the terms with which they are fighting her. Right? They don't fire a gun at her in that sequence. She only learns how to use the firearm after that sequence, and instead that sequence is dominated by melee combat, and then eventually the second someone draws a gun, that tomahawk goes across the screen and kills him. And then she switches to that other fighting style, which I find really engaging and shows her development as a character.
I also felt like there was her effectiveness increases as she figures out like her reason for doing this. Because one thing that they established really early in the film, we see her hitting the mark again and again with the axe. But the minute she goes out, sort of in a fit of pique and frustration, and goes and tries to hunt small game in the woods, she cannot do it. She's like, and we saw how effortless it is for her brother, right? Who has like all these skills. He like shoots a hawk from like feels like a mile away, almost like a no look pass, and like that is and that's also the standard. Pardon?
She
had that hawk. She 100% was going to kill that hawk, as you were saying, Rob.
But when we see, I'm not sure she would have at this point in the film, because we see her whiff again and again and again. She becomes lethal once it is kill or be killed. once she is defending her people, once she is defending herself, defending her dog. But as long as it's just, I need to show I'm a hunter and I can do this, she fails repeatedly. She like blows the moment. She fails to land the shot.
What's the first hit she lands in this movie?
So when she hits the bear?
It's when she hits the lion.
Oh, the lion. Right, right.
The mountain lion dives at her, and she lands the hit. This is something that the film doesn't reveal until you see it, but the film doesn't reveal until later when Tabe is talking about finishing hunting the lion, where he was like, dude, you got it. Like, it was basically dead when I found it because you jammed a spear into its ribs. Like, and it also makes it that particular reveal reframes the relationship that Tabe and Naru have, because when he talks to her at the village, he's like, he says, we did it, and then she pushes back against him, and then he's like, fine, I did it, I finished the hunt. That, and then later brutal. In the film, like, it's a brutal reveal and also a lie, and that's part of what makes the character relationship really interesting to me. And what makes the like dynamics of it interesting to me is because he lies to her in that moment about her involvement in that kill. And then later in the film, when it is in a time where he's like, okay, I have to be honest with you, you can do this because you did it earlier. You got that kill. With the exception of finishing it off, you did it. And it makes the like her progression into kill or be killed way stronger, because that is the moment where she is both trying to prove herself and also in a kill or be killed situation. And that's the first hit she lands. And from that moment forward, she does not miss her fucking shots. And I find it, like, really well done.
Well, sort of. So another, but, like, the Tabe relationship is really interesting. In the, what moves him to shoot the hawk is she makes this big show of falling asleep during a story he's telling about
his trial. With her.
Yeah. Pardon?
He's irritated with her, like, and that scene when, you know, when he returns is just an escalation of whether that is just, you know, brotherly protection, like an internalized paternalism of the group. But it all stems from the same thing, a begrudging respect.
But the story he is telling is about his drawstring getting soaked on the bow.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And,
oh, right, the bear.
Right. And so that's the other thing. Like, so I think she is consistently misreading Tabe in a lot of ways, who is more supportive than she realizes. But she keeps viewing a lot of things as challenges when they are attempts by him, not the other dudes, but by him specifically, to try to give the, like, if you want to do this, here's what you need to know. Here's how real you have to be about it. And so, like, she cuts that story off by, like, sort of mocking it. And then he sort of aces the hawk, etc. And later, at a critical moment, her bow comes undone, and probably realized, like, shit, bet the end of that story probably had something to do with, like, how to, like, deal with the situation if it comes up. But a thing, there's a beat between them I loved, which was, like, when they're out there with the other hunters, and she sort of demands to come along, and she wants to, like, be in on this hunt. There's a moment where she's like, she privately to him, she's like believe, like, basically, believe me, I can do this. And he says, yeah, because now you have to. And he recognizes this moment where it's crossed from, well, now you have said you will do this. You have put it all on the line. This is, are you serious about this? You've made commitments you cannot step away from. And so now we're not talking about my reservations. Now it is, you have to be ready. You have to do this. And I loved that moment too, where he is, like, sort of recognizing that there are social pressures that come with this. And by stepping through the door, she is now exposed to them. And now, like, has given herself no choice but to live up to them. And I thought it was such a terrific beat.
Right. And then that is what leads into him turning to the rest of the people and being like, she's a better tracker than any of us. Like, let's be real with ourselves for a minute. We do need her on this because she is going to be able to track better than anyone else here.
Tabe's a good hunter. There's no evidence the other guys are. One of them says, "What are you doing sneaking around back there?" And she's like, "Who's sneaking?" And just the implicit, like
I wasn't even crying, dude.
She was just walking. Yeah. And like that is that that's another thing in play here is that like Tabe's a great hunter. He's gonna be a great hunter. A lot of dudes like view it as like a job they're entitled to, but they are not necessarily they do not necessarily have that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Well, in many ways, that paints you know you can at the start of this movie you can view how Naru is treated as, you know, as we were talking about at the start of like, well, this is just the expectation. And you get like the nuance that is given to Tabe and Naru's relationship over time is one in which like he wants her to earn it. Like he's not necessarily standing in front of her and saying, no, like you should, you know, like Gandalf, you shall not pass. It's like, no, like you have to open the door. And like the arc that he has with her feels very normal for like an older brother looking after a sister in which he does respect her. He does love her. He has, you know, if you view her as like an angsty teen who has just decided this is what I want to do. Again, like as a parent, like I get it. Like I understand putting up like here are the okay, walk up the stairs, like do it without tripping. And she, you know, she trips. But she gets most of the way up and he lies to her about it. But I, by the end of that film, like when they're both tied up, like when they have that really thrilling sequence with the two of them, you know, against the predator, then on the second viewing, when I had like a full appreciation for the arc of their characters and, you know, they keep repeating that line about what you're supposed to say to the prey when you say they come no further. And, you know, he says that to her about like his, sort of like, I thought I was like, am I? Is this motherfucker choking up during a Predator movie? Like, what is going on? And I found myself choking up a second time when she's pulling off all the moves against the Predator on her own. And it's just wild. Like I was like, I enjoyed that arc of it on the first playthrough or the first watching. And the second time when I watched it with the Comanche dub with you may not know about this. I at least want to point out to people. Because it's not obvious. It's not in the subtitles bit. It is under alternate viewing, like underneath in the Hulu section. There is a Comanche dub that, unfortunately, they did not shoot the movie twice. And so they shot the movie with the character speaking English, but the same actors went back into the studio, did ADR, which just means dubbing, and speak full Comanche start to finish. It ends up being slightly more appreciative than just kind of distracting because it's like, well, I wish the lips, I'm glad I did it to see what it was like. I don't know that I'd watch it again. I'm glad they did it. My understanding is the script was written as though they will speak in Comanche from start to finish. That was the intent of the filmmakers. And this feels like a studio compromise. Yeah, I don't know. I found myself so emotionally invested that second time around because I, like hearing all those callbacks and seeing all the setups and payoffs. This movie is just full of subtle. Yeah. Like Rob, I didn't even pick up on the arrow thing the first time around. Like that just because in the heat of the moment, I'm like, "That fucking bear is gonna maul her." And then the second time, it was like, "Oh, that man."
Well, so much of the movie, by the way, is so memorable. I watched like about a quarter of the movie, a third of the movie, right away afterwards with the Comanche version, and it took me a good 15 minutes to remember I didn't like speak Comanche. Because I remembered the conversation so well that I was like, yeah, then I was like, wait, I don't know what that person says. Why don't I know what that person says? Oh, that's right, because I don't speak this language. So I need subtitles. But like it is like the characters are sketched out so efficiently and the exchanges are so loaded with meaning in few words. That it really is a marvel of like script writing, screenplay efficiency.
This is
one cool thing. So before we get off the script, the subtitling stuff is so the French trappers, you know, they don't translate.
Like, I feel like if you speak French, you get a lesser version of this movie in some ways. But go on.
Well, no, but it's I think it's like the way this movie, I don't want to step on Ren's point. I just want to get out of the way. But like when you watch the Comanche version, they don't, you might think, oh, maybe they would somehow get hung up on this and make a mistake and they're gonna translate the French. Like, no, yep. They just put the French down there in the subtitles and it's awesome. Well, sorry, Brent, go ahead.
In the English version, the French isn't translated.
Right.
And that's part of, like, one, a strength of, like, hey, that's a really good strength of good subtitling, is understanding what the audience is and isn't supposed to understand.
It's a choice artistically, as opposed to just putting everything there for you to read. Yeah.
Which I love. And also, I just want to note, as someone who speaks French, those dudes are such fucking dumbasses. Oh my god. They say the stupidest shit you've ever heard. And, like, just the biggest fucking dolts. Like, it is caveman-ass sentences out here in French, which I found very entertaining. But part of what we're getting at with all of this is Rob, actually, no, it's Patrick, who described this as a movie-ass movie. And part of what I love about this is that, like, even down to the emotional beats, this is a movie-ass movie, and I love it. It is brilliantly done because, like, at the end of this film, I was tearing up, and I was like, it's goofy that I'm tearing up because this is how movies make you tear up. This is how they do it, but it's landing in such a genuine and real place and is such a well-constructed film, even if it feels a little bit girl bossy, even if certain things about the film feel so contrived. It is so well put together and so much a movie ass movie that I was like, I don't care. This is, I am going to let this work on me and be thrilled that it is.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I can't remember when her mother, like, makes this comment where it's like, basically her point is that it's not like who's hunter, who does what. It's about survival. Like, what this all comes down to is survival. What are you doing to help the community survive? And I felt like one moment, in some ways, like, the girl boss aspect part of this, I think that really works in terms of, like, it being kind of ridiculous, is that the part where they find the kid who's been ripped open by the lion. Mm-hmm. And she has the skills to immediately figure out, like, the emergency life-saving medicine to get into him, to keep him alive long enough to get to the village for better healing. And we see also the quick, like, efficiency of the other hunters who, let's be real, are not amazing hunters.
Right.
But they're good, like, members of the expedition, because in no time they whip together a stretcher for him. But the moment where, like, she just saves this kid's life. And you like, I'm sort of sitting there, I'm thinking, like, yeah, this feels like, sorry, kid, this is a more useful skill than being a hunter. But part of it is also like, but her mom doesn't get that, like, kind of respect or role in the village. Like, that's the other thing that comes with it, is she serves the chief, and the chief is ailing. But, like, you not get on the chief track unless you are, like, a great hunter. And so there is that aspect of, like, aside from the girl bossy part of it, there is also, there are, even though, like, the highest levels of the role reserved for her come with their own sort of prestige and currency and respect, they also lock you out of some roles. And you understand, like, what, like, a more material reason beyond, because you say I can't, why someone want to break into that world of the hunter. But the thing about the survival like line from her mom is that it is when this comes down to survival that yes, not only does she become, like, her most effective like version of herself, but part of it is also what she does as a hunter there. By the end, it's not even, you've proven yourself as a hunter. What she comes back is with an important message, which is that there is a threat to the community.
Right.
That's and, the real, that is the real thing she needs.
And that's why it's such a strong character arc, and why I think the like post-colonial and like neo-colonial aspects of this film are so good and I think relatively well executed upon, is because the final message of that movie is bring back the predator head. And she's like, there are things we need to be worried about, but she is not talking about the fucking predator. And like, nope. That is why it lands really well for me, is that she has proved herself great, did all that, but she has specifically pushed back on a different kind of threat. She is a different kind of hunter and a different kind of person for a different kind of problem. Her brother is absolutely terrific as a hunter with a capital H. Naru is incredibly excellent as a like tactician, as both like a tactician and also strategist. Like, she does plays in this movie that are so clever, that like show that she is capable of dealing with a new kind of threat. What is established early in the film is how everyone's like, oh, you're gonna bait the lion, that's embarrassing for you that you have to bait the mountain lion, what a fucking dork. And then Tabe's like, dude, we should just bait the lion. That makes sense.
It's a very good idea, actually.
And then showing the fur trappers then try to use them as bait without understanding the mechanics of the predator in the way that Naru does is so fucking good, because then she understands the mechanics well enough to actually commit to their plan of baiting the predator, because she hands someone a gun. And she understands the rules of the environment that she is in and the enemy she is against well enough to use it against them, as opposed to sticking to tried and true formulas of hunting, which I find like a really strong part of the film's choreography.
The plan of the French trappers is so amazing. That entire sequence is incredible. Because, you know, like, again, in some ways, you know, it does hearken to the like the Vietnam origins of the the Predator films. Like, it looks like they've clear cut a section of forest to denude it and create like clear lanes of fire for them to use, which is what Western armies tend to do when confronted with an environment that is hostile that they cannot bring themselves to master. But then, yes, the other thing is, these guys think they're hunters. They're not. They're trappers. And they cannot, they go to the only thing they know, which is, how do you hunt kind of gentle, harmless, unfearing, like creatures, right? Like, how do you get, how do you hunt unaware animals who are not expecting a guy with a fucking rifle to come out of nowhere and get them? And it is so great for us, because we're sitting there and we know these are the most fucked characters we've ever seen in a Predator film. Like, these are the most dead people in, and like every member of the squad in Predator, in the original Predator, had a better chance than these dudes. Like, they could not arrange themselves. The two kids tied to the tree in the middle, and you're like, you staked yourselves out, you fools. You just staked Predator, yourselves out.
The Predator doesn't give a fuck about you. You made bait for yourselves.
It's the movie allowing itself to have its cake and eat its too, which is, like I mentioned earlier, like, the arc of these films as they make sequels is to just introduce characters who are here for the slaughterhouse, because you're here to watch the creature do a new, different thing that they came up with. And this movie is really restrained on doing that, despite the fact that it is clear the filmmakers, the screenwriters, have really thought of some cool shit the Predator can do. It's like, well, we can't really do that with our main characters. That's not the arc they're on. Like, the fights with the Predator wouldn't make sense. And so introducing the trappers, we're just because they don't even bother translating them, which like works as like an immersive sort of thing from Naru's perspective, but also is also on a second level feels like the film signaling like, like, they're here, like, you want to watch the Predator do some cool shit, like, get into the arena, like, we're gonna watch the Predator ruthlessly. I mean, oh my god, when they some come up when they are overlooking. Look, there's some cool gadget stuff, right? Like, the net is great. Well, we can get to all those. But
that's great.
Far and away, my favorite chopper. is when the camera is like panning up to the two overlooking the hill.
Yeah.
Well, it becomes just the two. It's like 15 people. Yeah. And they go, like, one of them goes to make a quip behind them, and you just see, this movie has a lot of great scenes of the predator being invisible and doing a cool thing and the blood splattering. The one that happens to one of Narwa's friends, like as they're running from the predator in that field and the blood like explodes on him is a nightmarish scene, no matter how many times you watch it. But I love that because this sequence like gives you a body count, sets up that these are dumbasses meant to just allow the predator to go off king. And it also like gives the audience a chance to breathe, because we want Naru to be okay. Like, we want Tabe to be okay. And we know that one of them, probably Tabe, is going to die because the movie is communicated Naru is our central character. But like, where's the catharsis moment before the end? And like, you get that a bunch of times here, in a really, really satisfying way.
And also, you get the catharsis so... it's so good.
Because it shows them being so stupid, too. It's not... like, right. So frequently these movies are... yes, sometimes horror films are people making bad decisions. But this isn't like, oh, you're running up the stairs when you should have gone out the front door. These are people laying a trap, like you said, Ren. Like, doing... they had a plan.
They're tapping their temple, being like, we got him.
And they do it. They trap the predator and go, we got him. And then he Wolverines his skull.
It's so good. The way the dude just gets pulled from the horse is so fucking entertaining. And then the reactions to it. And also, it really, the film does a great job just from like a construction standpoint and like standards of like how stories are built and how like movies are built perspective of this movie loves a Chekhov's gun. This movie is putting so many guns on the mantle. This movie has put an entire armory on the fucking mantle by like 45 minutes into the movie. Rob, what you're talking about the healing, right? And her role in the community. The first thing she does is use a thing that reduces body temperature. And like, the film is so good at giving Naru tools that a fan of the Predator series.
And you're like, there's, hey, you found your boggy place.
By the way,
I found your boggy. Wait a minute, I remember when a guy was covered in mud. Oh.
But also, you expect it to go a different way.
Right.
Right. You do expect like, she's gonna think about that mud later, and she's gonna like do the Arnold thing. And no, she uses it as what the trap she fell into with it, which is this thing kills your mobility. Yeah. You are stuck here in a bog.
And then, of course, the Predator rejects it because the Predator's utility is its overwhelming strength, both technological and physical, but then it's also a fucking idiot and ends up shooting itself in the head.
I love the bit. So what I do like is in that fight, like toward the end there, I feel like you sense the Predator's confidence is not what it was. It walks into that.
Oh, you mean when it loses its arm?
and it steps though in with the moss, and you can see it put its foot out, and it knows it's not stable ground. And like you almost feel like you can sense it being like, I don't know if I should continue. But then it does, because it has no choice. It is a dumbass. But like the fact that toward the end it is beginning to get the sense of like, this is, and you know, I'm a sucker for this in a story about like indigenous people fighting invaders. I'm a sucker for the moment where the invader realizes the fucking land is against you too. And like you just shouldn't be here.
Yeah.
And it's a weapon that is being used against you. Like the moment where it realizes, like in some ways metaphorically, that bog is a gun pointed at its head. And all this that depends on the. So
I love that.
Yeah,
specifically to that moment, I do love that moment as a mirror and a better a mirror to Predator One and Arnold. Mm-hmm. That moment where he's yelling, "Come on, do it." Kill me, right? And he's like hoping for it. And then but what happens there is the Predator sees it, right? Arnold is not skilled enough, even at his worst clever, to actually set that specific thing that he wanted to happen up to work. But here, she's doing the same thing. She's like, come on, come on, like, come on, come on, like, come at me. And because she is from this place, because she is from here and knows and has interacted with specifically that bug in person, she has that mastery to make it work this time as compared to the way in the first one it didn't work the way that Arnold wanted it to.
And is the W a little bit contrived? Yes, sure. The way that she puts this the mask in the perfect position to shoot the predator in the head, yes, it's a little bit contrived. Do I give even a single fuck? No.
No.
No, I don't. And that is, again, a testament to how much of a movie-ass movie this is, that when that ending happened, I was like, I don't care how fucking stupid this is. I love it. Because I was immediately making justifications for why it wasn't stupid, which is how you know it's well done.
Well, there's stupid, and you poke holes in the logic, and you can't, like, it collapses under itself.
Right.
And then they're stupid with intentionality, right? These filmmakers knew what they were doing. Like, they understood we were about to break, like, some of the logic here, but you're going to hoot, you're going to holler, and you're just rooting so bad for Naru to do the thing. Do the thing, Naru! You know, like, you're okay with it. I do think it is, one of those things that is less interesting on repeat viewings, I will say. There are other parts of the movie that pick up the slack, like even just the discovery of the flower and that they're repeating the notion of this is how we get away from. And I think this is sort of a weakness of the Predator's sort of feature set, is that the characters have to get around this infrared somehow. I was kind of hoping maybe the Predator would just lose the mask earlier in some way that just didn't become part of it, but they don't, and it still works and it's fine. I'm with you that it was just so delicious. It's delicious, and this movie knows what buttons it's pushing and why it's pushing them.
And you can see so clearly how it goes a different way, and that's the thing I like about it, right? Because from the Predator's perspective, right, firing that shot, if the mask is in a different place, the shots change trajectory at a different time. In the Predator's mind, it's like, I know how far these shots go no matter what before this changes direction. I know how this gun works. And he shoots it, and if that mask is anywhere else in the environment, it goes through her head and then changes direction.
Right.
But because she put it, and that's why I think that it's like a movie-ass movie, is that it encourages you to make the kinds of justification that I am making right now. And that is why I really think the scene is well done, and why I ended up finishing the movie being like, that was so fucking stupid, but I liked it so much.
But she earns so much else, right? Like, right. I think that's part of why the movie is able to do the thing that is fun as opposed to the thing that is most logical and is just satisfying on sort of a guttural level, is because she did the work. Like, she did all sorts of other things that feel completely earned of her skill set, part of the arc of the character. They're like, hey, and let her have a little fun, too.
When she traps the tree in the same, because she knows that the Predator moves through the environment in the same way she does, by sliding and then kicking off trees, and then she puts those fucking spikes on the tree, and the Predator just slams into them. I'm like, oh, that is the moment where she won for me, where I was like, okay, cool. This, I don't care what happens from this moment forward. Naru has won this fight. The second the Predator goes body first into a bunch of spikes. So good.
Well, I think that's partly what's so satisfying there at the end, is one of the things we see a lot in this is in the predator prey dichotomy. Again, we see how quickly the reversal happens and how effortless it is once the higher up on the food chain species encounters, we get that shot of the little animal eating the ant and then getting nailed by the snake, and the snake immediately is killed by the predator. And I think later the wolf gets a kill right before the
wolf goes after a bunny, and then the predator appears for the wolf. That poor wolf. Oh man, the way that thing goes out at the end.
Fucking a samurai movie.
Like, yeah, like that was fucking ome wa shinderu. Like,
but the way that, like, that final fight, from the moment she gives her speech to the French trapper, as she explains that, like, this is, like, she already plotted out. It's already done. Like, she's already killed him, effectively, is such a great moment. Because, like, it is all the learning she has needed to do to move into, like, apex predator in this film has already happened. It happened when the Battle of Tabe happened in the clearing, and boy, does he go out. That, like, it is awesome watching him just, like, fucking trash that guy from horseback. They obliterate the remaining French trappers. The whole thing rules.
Well, you get to actually see what the movie implies in the way that the rest of, like, the group responds to, like, it's implied that, oh, Tabe is an incredible hunter. Like, there's a reason that he is able to tell everyone else, hey, actually, my sister is going to do this. And if it was anyone else's sister, they'd all be laughing and they would just move on. Like Nara would not be able to get away with what she gets away with in this film. But then they save it until the last possible moment. And it's part of what the rewatch is satisfying, because you don't get that payoff until the end, and then you get that when you watch it again, understanding, oh shit, like, this is why he is seen as, like, such an incredible figure within the community.
Mm-hmm. But
is Tabe the reason why Billy slashes himself across the chest in the future? Does this somehow translate down the line?
Oh my God.
Because he gets that is what that is.
I think this is a fun visual nod.
I think it's more of a fun visual nod than they're trying to directly draw the line. But
yes, this movie's pretty smart about its Easter eggs, and, like,
right.
Yeah. that's a deep cut that I don't think you would quite pick up on unless you'd seen these movies.
Right, because we saw them so close together. Yeah. I was like, oh, that's what Billy with the thing is across the chest, just like they did to Tabe.
If it bleeds, we can kill it. That's
a little bit. I have a bad feeling about this.
Yeah.
she also does the like, it can't see me, or does the equivalent line that Arnold does when the mud part happens. And so this movie's very smart about its callbacks, its Easter eggs, in a way that feels very authentic and fun, as opposed to, which is, like, really easy territory to fall into with films like this.
It's a movie made by people who not only love the original film, but understand it intimately. Yeah. And that is, I think, the big distinction, because I think a lot of I got a bad feeling about this style of things is people who love a thing very much, but have not put in the work to understand it with the kind of intimacy required to produce something that is not only derivative of the previous work, but in conversation with it.
Yeah.
Let's turn to some questions before we wrap it up. Andrew from Toronto writes, I loved Prey, excited to hear y'all talk about it, but did any of you feel some of the human-to-human combat and traversal stunt work was a bit too of the moment? There seems to be a post-John Wick style de jure that felt a little out of place to me, including the single-take beatdown Naru delivers to the French trappers. I mean, it's pretty badass, so I'm probably protesting too much, but I'd be interested in your feelings, especially considering your discussion of the action aesthetics of the original Predator last week.
This is the first thing I thought during that scene, which was, she is fighting with the precision of the John Wick style of action film. She is doing the, like, one shot, bop, bop, I'm going to fight six people at the same time. And I think it's cool as fuck, doesn't land as much as I wanted it to, but there are moments in there when she fucks up, or when someone lands a hit that feels like a real hit, that I really love. The moments where the, like, John Wick-esque precision falls through and she's like, oh, fuck, are terrific. It's why I like the earlier fight scene, the earlier human-to-human combat fight scene, where it's just Naru and the other hunter beating the fucking shit out of each other.
She bites him!
It is messy. That fight is messy and human in a way that I really, really appreciate and wish had been a little bit more present in that later scene.
The one other thing I'll say about the action is A lot of modern action films, the camera is so goddamn close that you have no sense of what's happening. I don't know the exact reasons why movies have ended up that way. I'm sure there are artistic and technical reasons, but it's so difficult to have a sense of what's happening. Like, if you had to ask someone after the fight, like, what occurred in that fight? So many modern action films are just extreme close-ups that you have. You don't have a sense of the space. And I think part of what makes this movie work is, yes, some of the shots are close, but there's also a lot of wide shots that sustain. Or even when it cuts, it's not cutting to hide, like an obvious, like, cut to something else because they don't have a way of, like, showing a continuous. Like, this movie over and over has a real confidence to its action scenes that I understand the geography, how we got from A to B, and could tell you the narrative of that action scene by the end in a way that I don't feel is true of like, it's part of why John Wick was a revelation, right? Like, part of the, yes, it's Keanu Reeves looking a badass, but it's also, holy shit, I'm just like, I'm watching an extended sequence that is impressive to watch. It's why Top Gun was I haven't seen that movie yet this summer, but like, it's because it feels like you can understand what these people did and how the connected tissue is on the screen. And I feel like Predator, it does that pretty well as well.
I think Trachtenberg makes good use of the high drone shots, like both for stylistic effect to draw attention to like the fact they've got incredible spaces to work with and like the way the characters move through the land. It's awesome. I think it also establishes a bit like the topography of the film at a lot of key moments. Like when we go, God, I love the fucking shot where, when the Predator is finally like, oh, these guys use guns. All right, everything's in play. So when he uses fucking floating grenades and just like fucking like obliterates the entire. Yeah, it's incredible. But I think there's also like great attention to detail with like the Trapper's camp.
Yes.
Trachtenberg takes care to always move the camera basically in an arc along one side of the camp, so that where the dog is being like held prisoner and Naru's cage is always off to the right and back of the camp. And then like the leader's tents are always like forward and to the left. And so like consistently where like the things where they're initially established to be in relation to each other, they remain roughly in that relationship to each other through the film, which makes a lot of this navigable. But I do kind of agree as well that, like, yeah, sometimes the really efficient calisthenic style of some of the combat does, like, I think in years to come, like, and the fact we have a question like this already sort of anticipates that moment, I think it's going to, like, be a look that defines this era of action movies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it will also date a lot of the works that deploy it. Next question comes from Honesty. Hello, Waypoint crew. The score for Prey, composed by Sarah Schachner, who also did the music for several Assassin's Creed games and Call of Duty games, is very different from Alan Silvestri's original Predator score. Do any of you prefer one style or the other when it comes to sequels and spinoffs to older films? Do you have a preference for how much or how little the new film's music references the originals? Thanks for doing your turn. I always enjoy the opportunity to for y'all to share your thoughts on movies.
I mean, I'm glad that so many films do the bit where, oh, we're echoing the theme from the original.
It's one of the reasons that everyone involved in the new Jurassic Park movies needs to go to jail. Like, you took one of John Williams' like S-tier compositions, God, yeah, and just shat all over it. Hacks.
I mostly adore Michael Giacchino's soundtracks, and so I feel like we can lay that at the fault of what's his face, that hack filmmaker.
Yeah, Giacchino's a genius, but like, yeah,
I agree with you. Sucks. Now, granted, it does help that Predator doesn't. It has a style, but I don't think it has a theme, like an iconic Predator theme in the same way. But I don't know. Like I thought the soundtrack for this was terrific, much more naturalistic, quiet, like it more like emphasized what was happening as opposed to the music in Predator is a character. Like,
it is a Scooby-Doo character at times. There are moments where they're moving through the forest in Predator where it's like do 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 do, and it's like, dog, I don't need you to. I promise you,
these guys, I understand enough from these guys moving. We do not need to be telling me this via the music. And I think the thing I really like about Prey's soundtrack is that it's like, we can just let these people move through this space, and you are going to understand what we are communicating through this, that through with that, and we don't need the
Well, so I feel like, so with Silvestri, I think what he's also doing is he's doing a kind of composition that's more openly martial and is like of its genre work for films of that time and for the war movies that it is in dialogue with. I think you listen to was it Goldsmith who did Die Hard? You see a similar sort of approach to scoring a film where there's a bit of like more bombastic like big Hollywood orchestra style approach to a lot of this. I think one thing I love about this sound, because the soundtrack was something that sort of jumped out at me, partly I don't think it's like repeating any motives from the score for like Last of the Mohicans, but it has a similar sort of sense of like that is a movie that is composed like sweeping shots of like people living on the frontier of like indigenous and colonized lands in the 18th century. This is sort of similarly situated, and I think the score both accentuates like the beauty and rhythms of the life we see here, and also gives the film a really distinctive aesthetic identity from the original Predator. I think the decision to have in some ways the callbacks be so direct, but then also to have them occur within a completely different sort of film is really inspired. But maybe that's what you expect from Trachtenberg, who, you know, his whack at the Cloverfield series was to make an incredible like imprisonment horror film.
And even he did the pilot for The Boys on Amazon, a show that like also he immediately establishes an incredibly, whatever you think of like where that show and those characters go, I mean, like the visual identity of it is so thoroughly present in the pilot. He is just, for a guy that I originally met as like the co-host of a video game and movie review show, like the fact that Dan is now someone out here making like one of my favorite films of the year, like a film I'll be thinking about for years, is just,
somebody asked him in these questions if you knew him. Totally rad.
I know. Maybe a stretch to say Dan and I are friends, but I have met Dan a number of times, like back when he worked with Jeff Cannata and I forget the last name of the person on Totally Rad Show, Alex something. Yes, like I have chatted back and forth with Dan a couple of times over the years, and it is a delight to have told my wife after we finished the movie. She said, "You remember?" Like, I pulled up a picture. She's like, "Oh, that guy. Like, yeah, he talked about video games." I was like, "Yeah, he directed that film." She's like, "Oh, okay."
So, two questions. I'm going to read them back to back because they're both very dog-centered. Which scene do you love the most, and why is it every single one with the dog in it? The other question, if the dog didn't make it through the movie, how much would it have affected your opinion? Ooh. For me, my rating of 9 out of 10 would have slipped to 5 out of 10 at least. I think I'm there too. Like, I was sitting there, I came so close to being like, I need to know if this dog's going to make it. This dog is awesome. This dog is smart. This dog is helpful. This dog is a Mina. This dog is perfect. And it's okay if, like, if the movie's doing the whole, like, hey, we're playing with live ammunition here and everyone is fair game, that's cool. Go and make that movie. But I now need to know if that awesome dog is going to eat shit over the course of this film so I can prepare myself.
There was a scene where I was worried that the dog was going to bite it, and I was like,
Which one were you most worried where the dog was going to bite?
It was during the Predator fight, where I was like, dog, you cannot get involved in this situation. It was the Tabe Naru Predator fight where I was like, you cannot get involved in this situation. If you don't, it'll be fine. And the movie, out of a deep kindness to everyone watching, was like, I think the dog will be fine. And we all went, okay, you motherfucker, but you're on watch.
So I'm trying to find the specific anecdote I heard about this dog, but that
I
dog
heard he was bad. I heard he was a bad dog.
That
on
dog
set.
Has zero training. They mm-hmm. wanted this specific breed and were only able to find one that how it was in a shelter that they adopted and then just went for it. And like they had, there was apparently a lot of like extra takes needed to be taken, but you can kind of tell sometimes when that dog is just moving in the way that dogs move and aren't trained. Like they're not, the dog doesn't heal the right, quite right. the right way. Kind of starts
dog
going
fucks off into the woods. Yeah. It sure looks like a dog fucking
exactly,
off into the woods.
Exactly. Exactly. And that just comes from the dog being totally like, they're just like trying to like, you know, fucking wrangle it by
wrangle it. Yeah.
Yeah. Instead of it being a trained Hollywood dog, it was not. And there are definitely scenes where you're like, oh wow, that dog sure is fucking off.
Like, I wonder when they're in that opening scene when the dog gets caught in the trap and the dog ends up licking.
I assume every wine is ADR. It has to be, right?
Like, yeah, it has to be ADR. Like, I was like, did they plan the shot where the dog licks her face? Like, I presume not. I think they're just rolling yeah. and it's just like, we'll cut together enough of this stuff
yeah.
to make a scene.
I mean, it feels like they got a smart dog who is poorly trained.
Yeah.
Which is what the film is about. A smart dog who is who's like mediocrely trained. Like this dog is too smart to be trained very well.
Also, I do love that the dog is like in every encounter is single use. It's not Nara's ultimate, but it is like her E power, like to give like high escapability. Like so it's like, oh, you fucked up the arrow shot on the bear. Okay, I will taunt and I will like leash this thing away from you. But once I lose it, you are on your own. You have to get out. So when it comes sprinting back past her and is like, you're it. It's like, I hope you can figure out the beaver dam yeah. thing. I was like, this dog fucking rules. Dog is like, I can piss off the predator. I'm not going to help you fight the predator. I'll just like do a drive-by and then I'm gone.
Dog is like, did you just miss your poke? Did you just miss your cue? Come on, dog. You are playing the ADC. What are you doing? You cannot miss your cue. You are in bot lane. You cannot miss your cue.
Pat writes, how sad are we all that the original intention for the film's marketing to avoid revealing the Predator connection didn't pan out?
Oh, my God. God,
because that would be impossible.
I like, think so. It's just, yeah,
it's just not. The movie. It's a noble gesture. But I just don't. I don't know how you produce a trailer where you don't like at the end, like have you know the Predator cat. It's just so. If it was this is an instance where you actually would want it to be a streaming movie, right? Yeah. Where it wasn't released in theaters. The only way you could have done this was it was shot in secret. The movie is done, and all of a sudden they're like, hey, there's a movie called Prey.
Hey, wait. Did they show the Predator in the original Predator trailer?
I'm sure they showed the infrared.
Did they?
Great question, though. That's a great question.
Because it's not original. The Predator isn't in the original poster.
Well, yeah, but that says it's Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, it's like, a poster.
No offense to Amber Midthunder, but I don't know that. Although she is she's on the original poster, right? They like she is on the one with like the green blood on her face. But like that's more of a marketing technique for Predator.
They show you a lot in a trailer I'm looking at.
Yeah. Okay.
Like there's definitely we're heightening like what is it? But we see thermal vision, we see the Predator claw, and we do see a pretty easy to parse outline of the trailer in invisibility mode. They don't show you the Predator, but you see the Predator. Sure. Yeah.
It's also worth noting that a fun thing about the way this movie is made, and this could be one of those like marketing told me to tell this anecdote things from an actress, but there is an interview I read with Amber Midthunder where she was like, I didn't know this was a Predator movie going into it. No one told me this was going to be a Predator movie. Dan Trachtenberg didn't tell me this was going to be a Predator movie. Basically, she was like, I went in to do some line reads and was not told this was going to be a Predator movie.
I do believe.
This was going to be a Predator movie? Because also, like, they never, because of what the movie is and when it is set,
No one says the word predator throughout this fucking movie. Like, from what I understand, they got into filming before it was clear that this was a predator movie, which I think is like, I love it. Absolutely sick as shit. Like,
well, and the actor who plays Tabe Dakota Beavers was like, has no other credits. This is like essentially his first role.
He will soon.
Well, yes. I'm getting the specifics of this wrong, but essentially was like working at a Walmart and then is in this film.
That's just gonna be such a fucking heartthrob. Holy shit! That dude is so fucking hot.
Yeah,
and it's so interesting because this movie, which I mentioned this in the Predator podcast, was like born out of Trachtenberg hearing about how the original movie plays out and like, oh, cool. There's like this indigenous, well, I'm sure they weren't using that phrasing on the bus in eighth grade, but a character who has a big fight with, you know, the predator. And when he went to go see the movie, then realizes that wasn't true. And like, that's the original seed of an idea for what comes here. Like, God, can you imagine if they had made this movie in like the 90s? The trappers are probably the ones that defeat the predator, right? Like,
no, they work together, right? It's the Comanche and the trappers working so together. That's how you defeat the predator.
We both respect the land.
Right, well, because the predator is the ultimate invader colonist that's colonizing the whole, right? So, like,
he's the bad one, not us. We're here to help.
Jesus, you're so right.
Yeah, it's like a movie that couldn't have been made until we got to a certain point about, like, studios feeling X amount of pressure. And, you know, again, you don't win them all. It's like the movie's wasn't shot in Comanche. Would have been better for it. But you know, I think is seemingly, you know, again, I'm not an expert in Comanche, but like seems to have taken a lot of the steps to be respectful, authentic, casting appropriately. And I think a lot of that is like, it makes it a better movie. It makes it a more interesting experience because it takes that stuff as seriously as it does.
Rob from Lowell asks, what did we all think of the experience of Rob writing into the podcast on our home entertainment setups, and especially for Rob, did it feel like an appropriate theatrical experience on your setup?
Excuse me.
Well, Lowell, thanks for writing in. So I will say that the one thing that kind of killed me about this is, in a lot of ways, like, stuff looks good on Hulu, etc., but it seems to me, like a lot of streaming services do, they have sort of crunched the mix down a little bit so that it doesn't have a huge amount of dynamic range, which a lot of services do because people hate riding the volume on the remote. So when shit gets loud, people like despise having to turn it down, which I can, like, you know, especially if you have kids or neighbors or stuff, like, you get paranoid about that stuff, I'm sure. Yeah, Ren, I'm sorry, what?
No, please continue.
Do you have a problem with Rob from Lowell's question?
No, I have a secret. I have a secret on how to win, how to game the system. On how I game this system.
Yeah.
I think different movies have a slightly different mix for headphones.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so whenever I watch a movie, because I can't change the volume on my TV, I put headphones and connect them to my PS5 controller, and I get a terrific audio experience. I have a tremendous time in my audio playground with my headphones on, and I have the mix is perfect for my little headphones. Look, and no one can stop me.
Good headphones, like, best way to get great audio. Decent headphones. To get to match decent headphone performance, you're spending hundreds, thousands on speakers. With the headphones, you can just get that. Yeah. But the thing that, like, really contrasting with in my head was, I just watched The Harder They Fall on Netflix, which has like a true theatrical mix on it. Mm-hmm. And that mix was ridiculous. Yes, like, it would be a nightmare if you lived in an apartment where, like, the walls are thin or something. Like, absolutely. Like, just absolutely, like, criminal behavior to listen to that movie at volume. But, like, it does add something to a movie where it's, like, when things are really popping off, they get louder. It opens things up, so there's a little more, like, detail you can make out in the sound. The one thing about watching Prey was, like, I wished I was seeing it in theaters, because I would bet you that would have had a very different and probably better mix. Like the picture, that can look great. You know, you sit close to a good display, you're still seeing a beautiful movie, beautifully shot. But like, I think it would have been really incredible being there in a theater.
Yeah.
Like with that soundtrack, with that, you know, detailed soundscape all around you, would have been
really the sound that kicks in during the ruined forest sequence when the predators camouflage comes off and like the camera swoops in and it's putting its hand up and the smoke from the burned trees is like, it's killer. And like, I have an okay setup, like far away from Rob's, but it is one of those where you're just like, man, this was clearly mixed to be in a theater. And like, there's just no way you can match that. And it sucks. I hope at some point, whenever like the license expires, like, you know, whatever, a year from now, whenever that expires,
UHD release on a disc with like,
I'm going to be buying that. But like, I'd love if, you know, this movie clearly sets up in the credits, you know, an opportunity for them to do even a direct follow up.
Well, they have to, because the gun didn't get into back to the Predators.
That's true. Yeah. And that's that is established in Predator 2.
Well, Kyler, you telling me did?
Did you watch to the end of the credits?
I watched the end of the animation.
Well, it sets up the premise for the second one, but we don't actually see how would that interaction occur, and then those guns.
Part of the assumption is
Kyler, you think the Predators just showed up and killed all them Comanche and took that gun?
No, it was an exchange between warriors respecting each other. Obviously,
it's so ominous at the end. Not a fucking chance, Kato.
I mean, maybe she has Kato, to put herself
the
again.
The Predators are good, actually. Contreras,
look. I mean, don't they give it? Isn't that the whole thing? They give that gun to Hoomst?
Danny Glover.
Danny Glover and Predator 2.
Because Glover has proven himself. Yeah. Do you not think that she, by killing the Predator that they dropped off earlier, has proven herself?
But I will say, yes, she does destroy it. She does kill it, but also she rips off its skull in a very, perhaps insulting manner to the Predator people.
No, that's their thing.
That is respect. That is respect to them. That is respect to them 100%.
So here, what we're referring to is the end of Predator 2. Danny Glover has whooped the shit out of this Predator.
Rob, can you correct me if I'm wrong, but does Danny Glover engage in one-on-one physical combat with the Predator and come out on top?
Yeah. But
stupid. The Predator, shut the fuck up! He fights a bear! Whatever.
Hold on. But by that point, he's matadored that Predator a lot. Okay. Like, that Predator is, like, fucked up. He's already had to do the whole, like, go break into an elderly couple's bathroom to go try to patch itself up over the sink. It's very funny. The Predator's just like breaking into someone's home and be like, oh, shit, I'm bleeding out. I need to put some like powder over this. And like, oh, that doesn't look good. Better seal that up. And so later, yes, Danny Glover like gets the better of him in hand to hand, but it's because he's also wielding the Predator's little like disc weapon. Mm. And that thing just like, is like a frisbee lightsaber. And so Danny Glover just like gut punches it with the disc and like carves it in half. And then the other Predators are like, all right, much respect. What we got anything for this guy? I got this antique gun.
Hey, Danny Glover, does this do anything for you? In a similar exchange.
I think it's
a perfect parallel to how the gun was given the first credits, time.
To me, the credits do not feel like, oh, cool, the Predators are here at our village, and we're about to have a real cool
Maybe
exchange.
They'll make another movie, but if they don't, I'm just going to assume that they're just here to be like, you did it. Let's exchange, you know.
I think they slaughtered them. I think like that is the only other reading of that. Pew, pew, pew.
It's either set up for a new movie in which they will somehow still get out of it.
Somehow the gun gets,
But if they never make another movie, I'm choosing to read that as an exchange between warriors who respect each other. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Yeah, hey, can we... You know what? That was awesome. We all really loved what you guys did. Here's this...
We didn't like Jeff anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, he was an asshole. Like, as far as Predators go, this dude was a fucking dork.
He's like, par for the course. Like, honestly, here's the thing. Predator 2, same fucking deal. Like, Predator 2, he's watching RoboCop play out in the streets of LA, and the Predator's like, this cop is cool. He's a cop with nothing to lose. He plays by his own rules. I must kill him. And but first I must protect him from all these criminals, these Jamaicans and Mexicans all over. Oh yeah, yes. Dude, it's rough. But like, so the Predator sort of like is his guardian angel, but also is just like kind of like priming him to be harvested.
Well, yeah, because like, the Predators are just suck. Big, are just they shitty. It's just an analog for shitty human big game. Well, so hunters.
here's the last email. Here's the last question. The movie draws a parallel between human hunters and the Yautja, the Predator, but the Comanche warriors are hunting for survival, whereas the Predator is hunting for sport. From a society with advanced technology, in the context of their society, are the Predators we see in the movies weird right-wing guys on luxury big game hunting trips?
Yes, 100%. I mean, there's the great line from Tabe when they're having when Tabe and Naru are fighting the Predator, and then he goes invisible and yells "cheater," which is like a very honest reaction that the audience is thinking to when this particular Predator does this a bunch of times, yeah. Where. Like right when you could just continue the one-on-one combat and like see how this goes. I'm going to go invisible. And I think that there's a direct line. The first movie, you know, you can see, again, the difference between Predator and Prey is one making the themes like really explicit and on the line. And this one is very much like, yeah, it is humans setting themselves up. Like the bait is just, you know, releasing an animal to distract an animal that you are hunting so you can hit it with a laser sniper rifle from hundreds of yards away. Ha ha! I did it. Yeah, and the movie is, if there is a theme that it's hitting you over the head with, it is certainly one of those.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, it's such a fucking, the whole thing is like, Predators will accept any form of ritual combat you offer them. Yeah, but they'll do it with their fucked up weapons.
Yeah, exactly. Dork.
Like, what? Like, yeah,
oh,
I
you
guess.
Got a sword? I have a laser claw. Okay, I guess that's apples to apples.
Like, you have a sword? Guess what? I have the best sword that's ever existed in the history of the universe, you fucking idiot.
And
like,
when you pick up that sword, I can make it retract so you can't stab me with it anymore.
Yeah, dude, like, you make a modern Predator movie, like, the Predators are swinging by Black Rifle Coffee to get their juice before the hunt, and they all, like, inexplicably pick up, like, Molon Labe shirts. Like it's just like that's who these dudes are. They suck. Like, it is so funny to me that for a long time, and I think the Alien versus Predator series like almost tried to codify this. It was like, ah, the honorable Predators, natural enemies of the insectoid and dangerous aliens. And it's like in all these movies, the most you can say about the Predators is that they do have a code, one that gives them the illusion of honor.
Right.
But they are not honorable.
Right. And that's like, that is the thesis of the first Predator movie, is that no code that bestows upon you honor actually means anything.
Yep.
Who's in the first movie?
Not Schwarzenegger.
Dylan? Blair?
Dylan, yeah. What gets Dylan killed is that the relationship between Dylan and Dutch is such that the thing that he understands as the code that binds them is not real. The code that the Predator plays by is not real. In this movie, the code that the Predator plays by isn't fucking real. And it is only real insofar as it gets in their way. And that is, again, part of the strength of these movies for me, is that, like, the code is not only not real and only serves to make them strong, but it is without fail their undoing. I think that is a solid part of these films.
Yeah, the Predator had Naru in a fucking trap, right? The Predator kills Naru there after she gets her, like, leg stuck in a trap. The movie's over. But because of that code and being like, oh no, this is unsportsman. Like now, I must leave, right? Like the code is, yeah, ultimately, like it's built up. I mean, not exactly machismo, but it's a similar style.
No, it's machismo. Right? It is 100% machismo. Yeah. Like that is the why the first film's relationship to masculinity and understanding of masculinity.
In this film, it felt less connected to that, but more about like a hunting culture being the difference between hunting for sport and hunting for survival, right? Where in the first one, it's much more specific to its parallels with machismo and group, right?
I'm just going to say we'll leave it there because I'm getting antsy about getting Patrick out the door.
Oh
we're okay. My kids are home and they're upstairs. But I want to refute this point of the warrior exchange, because now that I've had a second to think about it.
Yeah.
Do you really think after her brother was slaughtered, many of her friends and family were slaughtered, that a bunch of predators show up and go, much respect, fist bump, like, can we have that gun? That Nara's going to look at that and go, yeah, dog, like, makes sense. No, she's going to lay trap and bump along a couple of ships while they're landing.
I think the credits, by the way, are implying Prey 2. Like, I think that's fully.
That would really help. So
they, yes. Like, because she's like, we need to take to the hills. We need to get to a place that's harder to get to. And yes. The credits show the tribe up in the hills. Bam, predator ship, ready. And they're like, uh-oh. And like, so I think that's where this is going down.
Yeah. No. After she nothing personals kit, like nothing personnel kids the predator by shooting it in the back of the head, she is done. She is never going to see another predator again and not be like, where's a fucking 45? I am going to shoot this dude
nothing,
in the
nothing
back
personnel
of the head.
Kid is the ultimate move of a rogue HR professional who plays by their own rules. All right, so that'll do it. Thanks for listening to My Turn. Our thanks to Tumelo for the theme music, and if you're listening to this through Waypoint Plus, hey, we're grateful for that support. And if you are on the public feed and you like the idea of listening to this a week early and without ads, God, I forgot to put an ad break in. Can you put an ad break in for the public feed? Head over shit. To
I forgot, I was too excited.
You know what? Put it in the worst place, the shittiest place. Sorry, listeners.
If you heard that ad break,
I would never
putting
it in the worst place just to like make it a little shitty to motivate you to like go to waypointplus.com.
But
you could go to waypointplus.com to get this early and without ads. And hey, everyone, hey, forget what I just said and what conclusions you may have drawn, because I would love if you left us a review on iTunes. That's the most helpful place you can you can leave a review. You can follow me on Twitter at Rob Zachney. Ricardo, where can people find you?
On Twitter at @A_Cotto_ appears, getting ready for our next. Are we going to announce the next movie?
Yeah. What is it? Hit me.
Look, this movie is a modern continuation of a classic franchise.
Rob is so stressed.
I'm about to get angry.
Rob is so stressed. Rob was desperately trying to get out of this without you not doing it so that he could negotiate terms off podcast. Don't worry.
Look,
I see through his
look. There's a lot of connection and parallels and drawn lines between these two franchises. And I think it only makes sense. I think it only makes sense that we travel to the world of Alien and go to Prometheus.
Yeah,
the movie. This is how we're connecting it, because Prey is the follow up to Predator. So
yes.
The way we connect this is Prey. We go to Prometheus because that's the follow up to Alien.
And I wanted to do Alien. Since we started this, I wanted to do Alien really badly, and so I'm so happy about this connection. Listen, Rob, it's like poetry; it rhymes.
I assure you. It does not.
What's interesting about this? What's interesting about this one is that it's. Wait, correct me if I'm wrong. They're both the same director, right?
Ridley Scott, yes. Yes. Did Alien.
It's an interesting look at the creator returning
to
a work.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Look, Kato,
I think it'll be interesting
so
to talk about.
I think so too. Well, better. You're gonna have to guide the discussion. So,
oh God, that's right.
Like,
I'm hosting.
You have put yourself. You went up. You just nailed yourself to the cross, my friend.
Kato.
Yeah.
Kato, look at me.
Yeah.
Look at me.
Yeah.
I got you.
Thanks.
I fucking love Prometheus.
Yes.
Don't worry. We have plenty to talk about.
Listeners, just so you know, if you got anything with like birth horror, just be advised. Just be advised.
Everyone saw the new Game of Thrones episode. They've already been through the ringer. Are you guys acting like that show isn't popular? Get out of here.
Yeah. Well, we'll see what happens on week two, week three. Anyway. Okay. Hey, Patrick, where can people find you?
At Patrick Klepek.
Ren.
At Ren or Raven.
Next week, I guess.
Maybe.
We'll be watching. Maybe next week. Maybe not. Like, we got some stuff coming up.
We should
and
figure out the schedule, but.
And we need to brace ourselves for Prometheus. But the next my turn will be on Prometheus. But with that concludes my turn here with Pry.
Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.